Sean, you braved the sub-zero temperatures in DC. How cold was it?
It was pretty chilly, Jackie. I mean, it wasn't as bad as the Iowa caucus last year. That was truly, truly bone-chillingly cold, like minus 20-odd degrees Celsius.
Yikes.
Real degrees, not these fake American ones. But yesterday, it was 8-9 degrees minus. If you stood out in it, you got cold and chilled down. If you kept moving like we did when we were walking around town, because movement was quite difficult, it was fine. The weather was quite sunny in the middle of the day, but if you stood still, the wind got to you, and we got caught trying to find taxis or Ubers afterwards.
Yeah.
Took about 20 minutes, and it was really, really cold just standing around then, about 5 o'clock in the evening. So
yeah.
What it was like for the crowd who came out to the DC prison last night looking for J6 protesters to be released, those kind of conditions would have been absolutely bone-chilling.
Even for those people who just lined the streets to cheer on Donald Trump, like, fair play to them. Well, listen, Sean, the curtain has officially come down on this US presidential election with the inauguration of Donald Trump. And with that, this is the last episode of this States of Mind series. We won't lament now. We'll do that later.
We will lament later, and we'll use all those emojis of little faces crying and shedding tears and all that as well. But, you know, this is America, Jackie. There's always another election, and the next one is in November of next year. So really not that far away. And of course, election campaigns start a couple of months before the actual date. And, you know, this has been the perma-politics and perma-campaign of America.
Exactly.
Let's say the next election starts today.
Sean Whelan in Washington and Jackie Fox in Dublin with too much to dissect here. Donald Trump promised. Donald Trump delivered. Usually you have to wait until the president's State of the Union to hear about a president's policy plans, but the 47th president got up and running after he was sworn in. He returned to the White House ready to immediately overhaul the government using the fastest tool at his disposal, the executive order. A reminder that these executive orders are signed statements about how the president wants the federal government to be managed. It can be something as simple as giving federal employees the day off for Christmas, but it also can be used by presidents to pursue agendas that don't need congressional approval or go against the Constitution. Much of what was announced recently was expected, like immigration pardons for those involved in January 6th, as you were saying, Sean, government reform, withdrawing from the World Health Organization, the list goes on. Now, executive orders do carry the weight of the law, but they can be overturned by subsequent presidents or the courts, and several will face legal challenges. If you look at one of the most controversial of those signed on Monday, the attempt to deny the right to citizenship to the children of migrants, either in the US illegally or on temporary visas, that will run into problems because the 14th Amendment of the Constitution has long been interpreted to enshrine that right, and Donald Trump's action will be challenged in court. Anyways, Donald Trump is a man of his word, Sean, and he made it an entertaining spectacle.
Oh, he certainly did, Jackie. It was quite extraordinary. I was passing a television screen in between markings yesterday and looked up, and there was, I thought it was a game show on, some kind of a TV game show, such was the backdrop. And it turns out it was the stage set where the Trump family and the bits of the administration, the vice president and all, were arrayed in front of a crowd in what is normally the basketball and ice hockey arena in central DC, the Capital One Arena. And there was Trump giving it loads, watching his indoor parade, as you'd expect of a newly installed president. But then this extraordinary piece of political theatre where a desk and chair were produced, mahogany desk and chair, and a civil servant, effectively a member of Trump's administration team, with a stack of executive orders bound in leather for him to sign.
Amazing.
In front of 20,000 adoring supporters. Quite extraordinary. I mean, this is the ordinary business of government where heads of state sign bills, sign orders, sign documents, turned into almost game show-like entertainment for the masses to prove that here I am, Donald Trump, doing stuff on day one. I suppose a contrast to the last time that he was in power, really didn't get much done. I mean, he had one executive order on the day, and then the rest of it was this fairly chaotic business of trying to assemble an administration. He knows he doesn't have much time this time to do all that sort of thing if he wants to leave a solid legacy. So this time he did the homework in advance and had stuff lined up. I think 8 executive orders signed there in the basketball arena, and then another 33, I think it was, at the Resolute desk in the Oval Office, carried live on television on the cable news channels. And also, he was conducting a press conference at the same time. He had the White House press corps standing around in the Oval Office, asking him questions as he signed all these documents, and was able to give an explanation of what he was doing as he went on, and had a few other asides about how Gaza would make a wonderful redevelopment opportunity because it's got a lovely seaside location. Extraordinary amount of stuff coming out there last night. But this public spectacle of the business of government was the thing that really stood out to me. He wants to show the people that, yeah, I am a man of my word. I said I'd do this, and here I am doing it. But as you say, all of these executive orders, they're not exactly 100% watertight, legally binding instruments, not by any means. So we'll see how many of them are actually carried through. But they certainly do, like the memo you get from your boss on the email system, they do set the strategic political direction of the country. And the very first order that he signed was one to repeal 78 Biden-era executive actions and stop them from going ahead.
Yeah, I want to talk about some announcements that maybe got lost in the mountain of orders. And it seems experts, us journalists, are still trying to figure out, you know, what all of this means. One that struck me was that order by Donald Trump to shut down a major Joe Biden era immigration pipeline. This was the sponsorship initiative that allowed up to 30,000 migrants from Cuba, Haiti, Nicaragua and Venezuela to fly to the US. And I found this interesting because this seems to be the initiative that brought Haitians to the United States, who then traveled to Springfield in Ohio for work. Remember, or how could you forget that? Because Mr. Trump, he made that baseless claim during the campaign that illegal immigrants from Haiti have been eating domestic pets in the small city. The cats and dogs.
And the geese.
What was one that stood out for you, Sean?
Well, one in particular just caught my eye, and I haven't delved into it, was about withdrawing from the OECD International Tax Agreement. This is one that has been obsessive in Ireland over the last decade or more, of trying to put a floor under corporate tax rates.
I knew you picked something to do with
world.
Tax. I knew it.
Exactly.
I knew it.
No, he picked that. But the other one, I'm going to go for two because I'm greedy here. The other one to watch out is his rulings on gender and how the federal government says there's only two sexes, men or women. That's it, folks. None of this woke DEI stuff is going to be happening as far as the federal government is concerned. That is one of those culture war issues that's going to ignite a fuse, and you're going to see spin-offs and blow-ups from that one, I think, for the months, probably years to come. But it is one of those wedge issues that divide people in politics. A similar one is that all that explosion of interest in a very old story from Britain about grooming gangs in the north of England. These are things that divide people into political camps, and you try and grab the biggest half of the divided society and use them as your political power base. So that is one to keep an eye on, I think.
I think because we don't really know what it means, Sean, do we? I know with the two sexes one, it will affect, you know, government documentation, passports that you can only identify as male or female. Isn't that correct? But there's a lot of uncertainty when it comes to that executive order.
Yep, there is. And that's why I say it's going to keep playing out. I mean, it affects all kinds of things about prisons, about toilets, about sports. All kinds of things. So it's going to be a field day for people who are interested in that particular topic.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, John, you must go for a little while and do your other Washington correspondent duties, which are building up.
The old day job.
You'll be back later for 3 Things to Know in 30 seconds. Terry Duplat, former speechwriter for President Barack Obama. Michael Ricci, Republican strategist, former director of communications for House Speaker Paul Ryan and former speechwriter for another House Speaker, John Boehner, are here with me now to help us digest everything that has happened so far. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining me on States of Mind. Michael, I was only speaking to you recently for RT Radio 1's News at One programme, and you were hoping that Donald Trump would deliver a little bit more light and unity to his speech this time round compared to the American carnage darkness of 2017. How do you think that went?
I got the first sentence right. He talked about a golden age of America beginning, and he went into a fairly somber recitation of his sort of declaration of values. And then he wasn't really engaged in that part of the text. And then the second part became almost a separate speech with sort of this laundry list of actions he is already taking. And so I think, to go back to my point before the address, I think if you were someone who voted for him, then you did think it was uplifting because it painted a vision of what he said he would deliver for his base to make America great again. If you were somebody who is skeptical or is hoping that he will be more of a unifying figure, you probably heard a darker message. And, you know, that may have been exactly what he intended to do.
Terry, you were a speechwriter for Barack Obama for 8 years during his presidency, helping craft nearly 500 speeches on topics like global security and U.S. foreign policy. What did you make of Donald Trump's speech? What stood out for you?
Keying off what Michael just said, if you're a supporter of Donald Trump's, you loved it. If you were in that 49.9% of the country that voted for him, you loved it. If you were part of the majority of Americans who voted for another candidate, it was a difficult and discordant speech from the way you see the world. So, you know, one of the things that jumped out at me was, even as it was an inaugural address, it had a lot of the tone and trappings and language of more of a war speech, of a wartime leader. You know, sort of, you know, he used a lot of militaristic language. He called yesterday Liberation Day. He talked about revolution. He talked about repelling the invasion at the border, declaring national emergencies, and then sort of ticked off in a very specific way all of the things that he's going to be attacking. So to me, I felt it was the signal of signaling a very aggressive, combative approach to government. And actually, every president has to put a photograph, an official portrait. That's the portrait that millions of Americans will see online and when they enter government buildings. The picture that he's chosen somewhat resembles his mugshot when he was arrested. Yeah. So he's clearly signaling a very combative, aggressive posture as he begins the second term.
It's interesting, Terry, that you say, you know, he was like a wartime president, because a theme that was fascinating for me from Inauguration Day was his idea of America's ownership and what he considers rightfully part of the United States. You know, we heard about gaining control of the Panama Canal, changing the name of the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America, a similar thread when he said he wanted to rename the highest mountain in North America back to Mount McKinley after President William McKinley, because remember that was changed from Mount Denali during Barack Obama's time to reflect the natives who lived there. And he also spoke about America's manifest destiny to go to Mars. This manifest destiny is the idea that white Americans were divinely ordained to settle the entire continent of North America. So Terry, for God and for country, was it, is this the new American destiny?
I think this is how Trump sees the next 4 years. It was remarkable. I have to say, I just went back and reread the speech again to in that section of the speech where he ticks off all the things he'll do, all the things he'll campaign on, he gave most of these big, huge initiatives, maybe a sentence. He spent about, 6 sentences talking about Panama. So I think it's a huge signal. I mean, he uses the term, yes, he mentioned manifest destiny. But he talked about a country of ambition that expands its territory. And so I think, the challenge with Donald Trump is, he says 1,000 things a day and you never know what to believe and what to focus on. I think that's part of his strategy. It's to throw his opponents off balance, chaos theory. But when a president talks about, says, we are taking it back, typically when a president makes a statement like that in international affairs, now their credibility is on the line. Because if they don't do it and follow through, then their words ring hollow. So I think this is to be taken seriously.
Listen, both of you, Michael and Terry, you're both speechwriters. But Michael, Donald Trump obviously gave his inauguration speech and he stayed on script. But did you resist the urge to do a little bit of a facepalm when he went off script for another speech not long after the inaugural address, which he said he thought was better than the one that came before?
I remember from working when I was on the Hill in 2017, when he first became president, and that was a constant source of stress for the new White House when he would do that, including in front of Congress. And so that was a bug. But now I tend to think it's a feature and that they enjoy that because of the chaos and the flooding of the zone that it creates and trying to keep the media from focusing on any one thing. From what we try to do as speechwriters is have one, one key message, one narrative, always try to think about what the headline will be, what we want people to focus on. But, this approach is very different. It's deliberate in terms of last night. He then sort of gave a third or fourth speech. He spoke at the arena. He spoke in the Oval Office, and he's just trying to flood the zone as much as possible. And Jackie, and this is important, do it himself. I don't think he's going to speak as much through spokespeople and through surrogates as he did the first time he was president. So I think Americans should get used to a lot more of him, on their screen at all times. Mm.
And Michael, as you said, you worked on the Hill for Republican House speakers, and Donald Trump will need more than executive orders to get by when it comes to very broad themes like tax and dealing with the debt ceiling. He'll need Congress. He does have a Republican House and Senate. Will the Republicans get and stay in line, especially when it comes to jamming all of those priorities into one big, beautiful bill, as Donald Trump would say?
It's not probable. It's not likely. I think in the beginning, there will be some momentum. They'll do some. The Senate just passed an immigration bill last night. There'll be some things early on, some points on the board. But as these bills get more ambitious and as they get bigger, they tend to become Christmas trees that can fall over. And when you have such thin majority as you do in the House, it means that, small numbers of groups, small factions can control what happens to these bills. And, speaking of speeches, as Terry knows, President Trump will have to come back and give a joint address to a joint session of Congress here in the next month or so, as new presidents tend to do. And so he's going to want to do that with, them having their act together and them getting some things done. And so this period of, we used to think about this as 100 days, but this next, 40 to 50 days is very critical. And I think, again, as I said, one big difference from the first term, he was trying to let others do it, and he was kind of the closer in a lot of these negotiations. I think you're going to see him getting involved himself, and publicly or privately, trying to get these members in line from the very beginning. Mm.
Terry, you hinted at it earlier, because we've seen that flurry of executive orders from Donald Trump on everything from immigration, as we said, climate, to pardons after being sworn in. Things are moving at such a fast pace. Do you think this is a strategy from Donald Trump? Pump the news with executive orders and decisions, making it difficult to see the wood from the trees. We know from his first term that he was a master distractor after all.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is absolutely in keeping with the way he governed last time. His advisors are very upfront about it. This is no secret. They're trying to flood the zone. They're trying to destabilize their political opponents, the media. Again, when you do 100 things, it's hard to focus when you do 100 things, it's hard for your opponents to focus on one thing. They have to, You know, just think of all the Democratic leaders that are out there on the press. They have to coordinate. They have to think, what of these hundred, you know, hundreds of executive orders are we going to focus on? And if you can't focus on it, then your message is diluted. So it's very deliberate. It can be very effective. I think one of the things that Democrats are going to have to do in the, you know, days, weeks, months, and years ahead is keep their eyes on the prize. This was an election that by all accounts, the president won because Americans were outraged and angry about two primary issues, immigration and inflation prices. And so if the president Trump cannot bring down prices, then he needs to be held accountable for that. I think staying focused on that every day relentlessly, you know, what is the price of bacon? What is the price of eggs, gas, groceries, education, cars? This is going to be the test of whether the president can actually deliver the progress that he's promised his supporters. And so that means not getting distracted by, you know, dozens of other issues every day.
Finally, Michael, this is Donald Trump at the peak of his power, isn't it? How long do you think he'll be able to hold on to that? Because the checkpoint for him is really at the midterms, isn't it?
You know, as Terry alluded to, Democrats will be keenly focused on, you know, historically, opposition parties tend to pick up more seats in midterm elections. And given how thin the majority is in the House, I think Democrats will put a lot of eggs in that basket, trying to get the House back and just basically, you know, make Trump, who's already kind of a lame duck because he's a one-term president, just really cut off the second half of his presidency, which will also be people trying to run to be his successor. So, you know, he's on the clock in a way, you know, we haven't seen in a long time. Probably, you know, I think even as, you know, next 13, 14 months, maybe. And so, and one thing about the speech, Jackie, was, you know, he made a lot of promises. And, you know, in that second half of the speech, he mentioned government 11 times. He promised to improve basic services, make government more efficient. You know, you know, not a typical Republican speech. Usually we talk about getting government out of the way. So he, you know, he's on the clock, I think, both with Congress, but also with public opinion. I think the next, you know, getting things done and showing that he's keeping his promises in the next 6 to 8 months is very critical.
Terry Zuplat, former speechwriter for President Barack Obama, and Michael Ricci, Republican strategist. Thank you so much for joining us on States of Mind.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for having us.
Sean, you're back just in time for three things to know in 30 seconds. We might take a little bit longer this time. You'll understand why in a moment. First up, watch the World Economic Forum in Davos as world leaders and other notable people react to Donald Trump's second presidency. Secondly, and something a bit different, the US Oscar nominations are on Thursday. Keep an eye to see if the Oscars will even be held in LA this year after those devastating wildfires. And number three, as we said at the start of the podcast, this is the closing chapter of this series of States of Mind as series three comes to a close. And just want to say thank you so much for listening over the last couple of months during the campaign and up to the inauguration of Donald Trump. A wild ride, Sean. Highlights for me, I have a couple of them. Doing your inflation shop, getting to speak to people like Andrew McCabe, from former director of the FBI, Kamala Harris's uncle, hearing Fiona Burke's incredible insights from the US-Mexico border. And a standout moment too was getting to record the podcast from the rooftop of the incredible Hay Adams Hotel overlooking the White House. Remarkable. What about you, Sean?
For me, it was, yeah, I mean, first of all, again, thank you to all the listeners. You've really made this podcast worthwhile. It's been worthwhile anyway. I mean, I just enjoy chatting to you about these American political scene, Jackie, and that made it all the more fun getting up at ridiculous hours of the day and night, particularly on the road when we were doing these crazy road trips during the election campaign, which goes by in a blur. So if you ask me to pull out any particular highlight, I can't. I'm sorry. It's just, it was a crazy,
the whole
crazy
schmozzle.
Time. But it was great. The whole schmozzle, exactly. All of it. It was just great. It's been a blast and I've enjoyed it. And hopefully we can do it again at some stage. You never know. Like I said at the top, there's always another election on in this country. Mm-hmm. So, you know, here's hoping.
Well, listen, over and out, Sean. Take care over the next couple of weeks and months. It's going to be a busy one.
It sure is.